Hello, it's Friday, September the 10th. This is the Andrew Pearce Show, coming as ever from the Daily Mail newsroom. I'm going to talk to you about how ponies are actually bringing some much-needed joy and relief in care homes. In sport, the rise and rise of Emma Raducanu continues apace. The 18-year-old has made it to the final of the US Open, the first qualifier to ever do that in the history of the tournament. We'll be talking about the Queen. Apparently, she's a supporter of Black Lives Matters. And how do we know? Because one of her most senior Lord Lieutenants, who's often called Britain's most influential black man, says just that. But first, oh dear, it's going to be even more difficult to get face-to-face GP appointments, and there is mounting evidence that is having a very detrimental effect on our health. Patients' inability to see GPs face-to-face is contributing to deaths, according to one senior coroner. Alison Much says she's presided over at least five inquests during the COVID pandemic, in which she says poor care was a factor in the deaths. So should GPs do more in-person appointments? Dr. Ellie Cannon is, of course, resident GP for the Mail on Sunday, no stranger to this podcast, and she joins me now. Dr. Ellie, in an ideal world, I guess you would see more patients. Can you see more face-to-face?
Ideally, of course we would, Andrew. That's why doctors went into medicine, because we like seeing people. It's much easier, actually, to clinically examine somebody and work out what's going on when you see them face-to-face. Unfortunately, though, at the moment, there simply is not the capacity. So we're offering this hybrid system, phone calls, remote conversations, and face-to-face, so we can squeeze in as many patients as possible, because there simply aren't enough GPs. I think we're something like 10,000 GPs short in the UK.
And is it not just a shortage of GPs, Dr. Ellie? Is it also a backlog of appointments because of COVID?
Absolutely. So there are huge backlogs in the hospitals, as you know, and that's continuing even now. And what happens is those patients who are waiting for specialists are in pain, they want treatment, they're all filtering back into general practice, even if it's just to ask us when their appointment is going to be. So we're managing all of those patients who are waiting. We're managing a lot of disease, mental health problems, and all sorts of things which have been worsened by the pandemic. So we've got sort of very little supply of GPs with an ever-increasing demand. And unfortunately, it's just the perfect storm for what really feels like a mess, to be honest, in general practice.
This comes as a poll, which I think you'll be aware of, Dr. Ellie, which says that almost half of family doctors don't expect to offer face-to-face consultations as a default option ever again or in the foreseeable future. Does that surprise you, that figure, or not?
Well, it doesn't, no, because the word default there, you see, a lot of people don't want to be seen face-to-face. Now, there has to always be the option of face-to-face appointments, because that is what is safest in certain situations, as you highlighted about the point of view from the coroner. But many people don't want a face-to-face appointment, so it's almost a waste of everybody's time and capacity just to say all appointments must be face-to-face to start with. It makes far more sense to say all appointments should start off as a phone call, and then in an ideal situation they can be transferred into a face-to-face if necessary, which is the sort of system that a lot of GPs are operating now. That's certainly what's happening in my clinic.
Part of the problem we get readers of the Daily Mail telling us is that they don't get beyond the receptionist at a doctor's surgery. We all know traditionally, doctors' surgeries receptionists are formidable. They have to be tough. They have to weed out the time wasters and the people who want to see the doctor every day. Is that a problem, though, Dr. Ellie, in that perhaps receptionists are making almost clinical decisions about who should and shouldn't see a doctor?
Yes, and this, to me, highlights something really important, which is GP surgeries, GPs are certainly not homogenous. So in my GP surgery, it is doctors like myself who are triaging all the patients. We phone all the patients, we speak to them. It's not receptionists making decisions.
Right.
Because as you say, that is a clinical situation and that is something that really clinicians should be doing. And it's obviously far from ideal and far more likely to cause problems if you have non-clinical staff making those clinical decisions. But again, that may be due to supply and capacity. And I think we have to be honest here. The service around the country is certainly very different. There is a postcode lottery in terms of access. There's a postcode lottery like anything in terms of getting to see a good GP. And there are certainly different circumstances that people find themselves in. And we will, sadly, as a result of that, have people who are not seen when they really should be.
Just finally, Dr. Ellie, 10,000 GPs short. Is that because GPs are retiring faster than they're qualifying?
Yes, it is. And also, general practice is known now to be a very stressful part of the NHS. Younger doctors are not being enticed to go into primary care and to work in general practice. We obviously have got issues in terms of the workforce. Due to immigration and Brexit and things like that, but there just are not the numbers of GPs that there should be per capita. And when you look at European countries, we have a very, very low rate of GPs per patient.
Very interesting. That's Dr. Ellie Cannon, who is, of course, resident GP for the Mail on Sunday. You can read her every weekend. Visit mailplus.co.uk/subscribe to get access to all our podcasts, videos, opinion pieces, and much more. If you want to get in touch, tweet us at MailPlus or me at ToryBoyPierce. So the Queen is apparently a supporter of the Black Lives Matter movement, or so says a high-ranking palace insider. Sir Ken Olisar is the monarch's first black Lord Lieutenant of Greater London, and he told Channel 4 he's discussed issues of racial injustice with the royal family in the wake of the murder of George Floyd last year. Joining me to discuss this is Hugo Vickers, royal biographer and broadcaster. Hugo, when I heard this, when I heard Ken Olisar on Channel 4, I had a vision of the Queen taking the knee. I can't quite envisage that somehow. Most people, of course, bow to her or even curtsy to her. What's your view of what Sir Ken Olisar has said?
Well, I think what he means is that the Queen is, supportive of sort of equality in all matters of race and creed, etc. The Queen is, of course, absolutely not political in any way, and insofar as I understand it, quite a lot of the Black Lives Matter sort of campaigns are quite political. So that wouldn't be the sort of thing that she was interested in. But certainly her love and support of the Commonwealth, her dealings with a great number of different, heads of state, and indeed lots of people, let's face it, all over the Commonwealth, and her sort of general attitude towards conciliation and everybody getting on well together. If that's what he was saying, well, yes, that's absolutely right.
Because I'm sure Black Lives Matter, as you probably know, Hugo, supports defunding the police, for instance. That's something she would never get involved in. But the Commonwealth
is... that's political, you see.
Yeah, and, exactly.
Exactly. So that part of it she wouldn't like and would not approve of at all, because the whole point about the Queen is she's above politics. But I've been watching her reign very closely and studying it, and all through her reign, it is this sort of program of reconciliation, and that's what all the royal family have been trying to do. And even the Queen Mother, who you might have thought was rather sort of staid when she went to Rhodesia, I think in 1961, insisted, that people of colour should be invited along with everybody else. And I remember reading the reports afterwards, they said, this is going to make it much more difficult for people not to do this in the future. This is all moving things forward.
And it comes, of course, all this, Hugo, at a time when there is huge tension, of course, in the royal family over the comments of Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Sussex, in that so-called interview with Oprah Winfrey. It was more just a monologue, in my view. But she, of course, made the allegation that somebody in the royal family, they never said who it was, made racist remarks about the skin colour of her son. Without getting into that, how do you think the Queen reacted to the idea that people might think the royal family is racist?
Well, we know exactly how she reacted, because she said these matters will be discussed, but they will be discussed in private. In other words, she wasn't going to get involved in a big tabloid war, which, of course, I'm sure the tabloids would have absolutely loved, between the palace and Meghan Markle. And I hope that these things have been discussed in private. You asked me not to get involved with the interview. I don't particularly want to get involved with the interview, but there were a lot of allegations there which are completely easy to disprove, you know, with one stroke of the pen. General allegations, of course, where things are bandied about without anything being specific, is rather more complicated to counteract, because you don't know what they're saying.
Yeah, and the Queen is very keen, when she's no longer with us, that the Commonwealth remains a key part of the work of the royal family. And she would, of course, like Prince Charles to carry on that work as head of the Commonwealth.
Well, she has already managed to arrange that, which was extremely well done at the last Commonwealth conference in London. And I think that when the Queen, as it were, put it to the vote of the Commonwealth countries, I'm fairly certain she knew what the answer was going to be, because I don't think that she would have, as it were, put Prince Charles up for election as head of the Commonwealth if there was any fear that he might not be elected. And as I understand it, there'd be quite a lot of soundings beforehand with the different prime ministers in the different countries. And also, of course, it was all on her home ground. And I think that the Commonwealth leaders respect the Queen very much and would wish, obviously, to you know, go along with what she wanted. So it was extremely good, because actually, as you probably know, Andrew, this was not automatic. I mean, he automatically will become king, but he would not have automatically become head of the Commonwealth, and now he will.
Just finally, Ken Olisar is the first Black Lord Lieutenant of Greater London. Do you think in these days of perception that perhaps there should be more people of colour doing jobs like Lord Lieutenants and perhaps private secretaries in some of the royal households?
There are quite a lot, actually, already. And I mean, I personally, I hope it's not being controversial if I say this, I think that what you want to do is to get the right man for the job, or the right woman for the job. And Ken has been extremely good. I know that a lot of deputy lieutenants are people of colour. They, you know, they try to balance that, and they find good people. And there are lots of good people around. And the royal household's always had quite a lot of people of colour working in it in different capacities over the years. Probably more so than a lot of, you know, international companies and you know, societies, etc.
You could also probably add to that, Hugo, some quite a lot of government departments are pretty much.
I probably could, yes.
That's Hugo Vickers, who is the royal author and broadcaster, talking about the Queen and the comments on Channel 4 by Sir Ken Olisar. Visit mailplus.co.uk to listen to The Andrew Pearce Show for free and in full, along with all our other podcasts and our video series. Don't forget to tell your Alexa speaker to play Daily Mail News. So 1 in 10 shoppers who use what we call controversial buy now, pay later services are unemployed and dependent on benefits. That's according to a Mail poll. Now, the government's pledged to better regulate the sector, including companies like Klarna and Clearpay, but have yet to announce protection for vulnerable consumers. Fiona Parker has been looking into this for Money Mail and joins me now. Fiona, can you explain? It sounds obvious, buy now, pay later, but what sort of products would people be buying now and paying later for?
So these are products which started off with a lot of online retailers, particularly fashion and beauty, your ASOSs, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it might be a batch of clothes. You buy maybe £100 worth of tops and jeans, and you can then split those payments across 3 months. So you've effectively be paying £33 odd a month for 3 months rather than £100 all in one go.
Okay. And do they
what's in it for the company who's doing this? Do they charge more the longer the period, the payment period is over?
No, they're interest free. Right. So really the companies make money from the retailers they partner up with. They get a commission from them.
Yeah. And is part of the problem going to be that some people won't be able to make that payment in the third month because, as you say in your piece, they're often unemployed or dependent on benefits?
That's the problem. A lot of critics say that these products really do tempt you to spend beyond your means. Yeah. And of course, once you've done it once, you might think, oh, I might do it again with that set of headphones or a computer or even beer.
Yeah. So, and what happens if people do then fall by the wayside? They can't afford to pay or won't pay, perhaps in that third month. What happens to them?
Well, all providers will employ debt collection agencies who will then chase you. And while a lot of them say it won't affect your credit record, you know, this can cause quite a lot of stress. And obviously, a lot of people will then end up using their credit cards or maybe taking out further loans to meet those payments.
And I imagine, Fiona, that these companies have got busier during the pandemic because people are at home.
They have indeed, Andrew. They have absolutely soared in popularity. And actually, since the Treasury first said that they would regulate these firms back in February, Klarna, which is the biggest one by far, has grown by 2 million customers in the UK.
How? Heavens, that's amazing. When are the Treasury going to pull their finger out then and get in some proper regulation and protection? Because they know some of these customers are going to get into difficulties.
It's a question I've asked the Treasury repeatedly and they just will not give me a straight answer. All they will really tell me is it's coming in soon. Now, we have been told there'll be some kind of update on this in October, but what that will be, I just don't know.
And that's another month away.
Exactly.
And what sort of protection are you suggesting there should be?
Well, I think what the FCA want is they want...
That's the Financial Conduct Authority.
It is indeed. It's a city watchdog. They want these companies to be brought under their remit. And that means that anyone who's got a problem with these companies can go to the Financial Ombudsman and have those protections.
That's interesting. So that would be pretty straightforward. Why don't the Treasury do that? Or perhaps they are going to?
They've said they will. It just seems to be taking quite a long time. And, you know, these processes can take time, but we don't even seem to have seen the consultation documents yet, which is really the first step.
Mm. Just finally, what's your advice to people listening to this? Should we be steering away from these sort of companies?
These companies can be really helpful, and particularly, you know, if you're a student, perhaps, and you need to get some gear before you start university. But just really think about, you know, look at your outgoings and work out, will I be able to afford these payments in the next 3 months? Have I got anything expensive coming up? You know, we all know December, for example, is a really pricey time.
Yeah.
Will I be able to meet those payments? Because if I don't think I will, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. And I should have asked you this just finally. Do Klarna and Clearpay in particular, do they establish before somebody makes that purchase that they are going to have the money, or at least on paper, have the money to pay the bill in full?
So this is the problem. The only buy now, pay later firm that does do that, that does a hard credit check, which is what you'd get if you applied for a credit card, for example, is Layby. Klarna and Clearpay do not.
You have to wonder why that is.
Mm. Well, they say, obviously, it's good for their customers because even if they're behind on payments, it's not going to affect their credit score.
Fascinating. I hadn't even heard of this system, buy now, pay later. According to a Mail poll, 10% are unemployed or dependent on benefits. Treasury's going to announce regulation on it. And when they do, we'll have Fiona back to tell us all about it. That was Fiona Parker writing about this for the Money Mail. Thanks for joining me. Deputy Sports Editor Matt Gatwood's here with the latest. A huge day in sport, Matt. We talked only yesterday about could she possibly make it to the final, Emma Raducanu. Not only did she make it to the final, she completely whacked her opponent, and she's playing in the final the other teenager.
Indeed, yeah, an absolutely amazing story. You know, I don't know whether anyone would have predicted that she could get this far. Certainly, I don't think she would have done. It's just extraordinary that she's got through to the final. She's the first ever qualifier, male or female, to reach a major final, which she, as you say, achieved overnight, smashing Maria Sakkari 6-1, 6-4. She's got all this way now through qualifying, all the way up to the final without dropping a set. This was by far her biggest challenge so far. You know, we keep saying that every time she plays someone like Bencic, who she played in the previous round. But this was a 17th seed and absolutely hammered her. And there was, you know, the good thing about this performance, which was even a step up in quality for her from the way she played in the last round when she beat Bencic. She didn't even seem to show any nerves. She closed it out comfortably. She started well, which had been a slight problem for her in the previous matches where she'd started with a bit of a wobble, but she was absolutely superb. And as you say, now she plays the 19-year-old Leila Fernandez from Canada in the final, which will be Saturday evening at 9 o'clock start our time. So absolutely brilliant. And her quotes were great. You know, she was almost laughing at the end. She said it's crazy, cool, mind-blowing. So she was just seems to be enjoying it so much. There was such a lovely smile on her face at the end.
Yeah, and tell me, the 19-year-old she's playing, is she unseeded?
Yeah, so she was unseeded as well. She's the world number 73. So obviously no one expected her to get to the final either. So it really is incredible. First time we've had two teams in a final for a long time, since it was Hingis and Serena Williams, and it was Serena Williams won her first Grand Slam and went on to win 23 more and counting, because obviously she's still playing. But whether she adds to that tally you know, is doubtful now, because this seems to be an absolute changing of the guard and the new kids are in town now. So Serena went on to win 23. Well, who knows how many Raducanu could go on to win, but you know, maybe just one for this weekend will do.
It would cheer everybody up a lot, Matt. And of course, you wonder then, is the old guard ever going to be changed in men's tennis? Because I see that man, Djokovic, boring, is motoring towards another final.
I know, you can't help but think he, and that will be all four, you know, that will be all four majors that he's won. Now, you know, that's not, even in the era of Federer and Djokovic's dominance and Nadal, none of them have won all four in a calendar year before. So that will be an incredible achievement by Djokovic. So, yeah, I mean, look, he's astonishing. And I know he rubs people up the wrong way, but if you just concentrate on his tennis, he is an incredible player. And we will look back and obviously we'll think what an incredible achievement it is to win all four in a calendar year. The only one he hasn't won is the Olympics. But if he goes on to win this, it will be some achievement. I know he doesn't... You're not a fan, but he's a...
No, I'm not. Bring back Roger Federer. Bring back Federer. And finally, Matt, the test match. Oh, my. So all those people who've gone up to Headingley, the match is cancelled, not because of the weather, but because of COVID. Tell us more.
Yeah, well, or is it? I mean, this is the point. This is the talking point. And this is what the ECB, the English Cricket Board, and the Indian Cricket Board are currently discussing, shall we say. Because, yeah, India basically refused to play. They didn't want to play and put themselves at jeopardy. There was some COVID positive tests in their backroom staff, but all the Indian players were tested yesterday. They were all cleared yesterday at 6 p.m. So they were all announced clear, negative. The test came back negative. So they were in a position to play. They then decided pretty much up to midnight last night and early this morning that they still didn't feel comfortable playing because they didn't want to catch COVID. Now, you know, you'd say, well, there's no reason you should. You get out there, you play, you keep into your bubble, you'll be fine. You've all been cleared. But the thing that's lurking in the background here is that the IPL, the Indian Premier League, and all these Indian players will have big fat contracts to play in the IPL. That starts in 10 days' time. The IPL is also worth about $300 million to the Indian Cricket Board, so they do not want to see it jeopardised in any way. They do not want COVID creeping into the IPL, which it did earlier in the year, which is why it's not happening now, because it was put back. So that would seem to me to be a massive reason in why this test has been cancelled, which is obviously of no consolation to all the fans who've paid for tickets and paid for rail fares and paid for fancy dress outfits, this, that and the other, to get up to the cricket. So it's a really sad story that this has happened. The ECB are going to be so massively out of pocket. Now, the ECB only have insurance if this forfeiture, if this game has been forfeited by India and it's nothing to do with COVID. The insurance wouldn't cover a COVID cancellation. So they're saying, well, it's not a COVID cancellation because no one had COVID. We could have played. India are arguing the opposite. And that's going to be a very expensive argument that the ECB will be desperate to win.
Yeah. And if it is cancelled, Matt, does it go down as a draw or does it go down as an England win?
Again, this is what they're arguing about, because if the ECB say, well, you forfeited, then it goes down as a win to England and the series is drawn 2-2. If India can prove that, no, it's not, we haven't forfeited, we just couldn't fulfil the fixture because of COVID, therefore it would go down as a cancelled match and they'd win the series 2-1. And there's obviously prize money involved with that. There's ITC rankings involved with that. So there's a lot to be sorted out, and it remains to be seen where the governing body will be brought in, the ICC, but we all know whose side they will be on, because the real powerhouse in international cricket lies with India.
Fascinating stuff, as ever. That's the Deputy Sports Editor, Matt Gatwood, with the latest news. You'll be reading all about this, of course, in the Mail Sports pages tomorrow and on Mail Plus. Here we go. So finally, a heartwarming story for a Friday afternoon. A care home in Hertfordshire has welcomed some unusual visitors. Three Shetland ponies called Pickles, Romeo and Oliver visited Fox Hose Care Home near Hitchin, allowing bedbound residents to pet, hug and even take selfies with their new four-legged friends. Hannah Granger works at Fox Hose Care Home and was there on the day, and she joins me now. Hannah, what a lovely story. Whose idea was this?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. It was our event coordinator, Melissa, who organised it. I'm not sure if they reached out to us or vice versa, because they are a very, very local company to us.
What was the reaction of the your residents? Were they thrilled to see them?
Well, beyond belief. I mean, animal therapy as a whole, we have cats in the home for that purpose. We have lots of dogs that come in regularly. But the ponies blew everybody away. Not a lot of work got done that day by myself. Everything about them, the memories it must have, sort of all the sensory stimulation that it brought out of the residents,
yeah.
Because not everyone can express how they're truly feeling verbally. So
sure. And they've probably had a difficult 18 months, Hannah, because of COVID and restrictions on visitors and all the like.
Yeah, they really have. And so it's trying to think of new ways to bring some joy to the residents, because there still are so many restrictions on them being in a communal living environment. They can't just go out, go into shops, go into restaurants with their families. Not everybody's family lives locally anyway, and their families still have to make appointments to see their loved ones. So it's just trying to keep our residents stimulated every day, morning and afternoon, and just think of new ways of doing it.
And I think these three ponies are from the local equine service, Pixie and Pickles Adventures. So they're used to doing things like this, I think, Hannah, aren't
that's
they?
That's what they do. Yeah, that's it.
Right.
Yep.
Do you think you'll get them back again? Have you? I mean,
100%.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, that was a definite. They also want to use the Foxholes venue, if you like, as a bit of a training ground, because they adopt Shetlands, and then they train them up to become therapy ponies, and they said it's the perfect environment for those ponies in training.
Which one was of the three Shetland ponies was your favourite, Hannah? Pickles, Romeo or Oliver?
Do you know what? They were all lovely, but I think the general consensus maybe had to be Pickles. Apparently, Pickles is their most experienced pony, and they like to give her a day off, but they can't because she cries if they go off without her.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
And so they're in their element, the ponies. It's a treat for them as much as it
Absolutely.
Is for the residents.
Yeah, completely in their element, yeah.
What animals are you going to bring in next? Any thoughts?
Well, staff are always bringing their dogs in on their day off, myself included.
Okay.
So who knows? If we can get Shetland ponies in the home, I don't think there's any stopping us, is there? Maybe we'll have to get some exotic animals in.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Hannah, it sounds fantastic, and your residents are probably they're probably still on a high, aren't they?
They are, and even our residents that their capacity is very limited have actually remembered even 4 days later today, for example, and they're managing to tell their families about ponies that came into their rooms.
I bet the families think it's amazing, don't they?
Well, we have to inform them that they are, you know, the information they're receiving is correct. A pony did go
sure.
into their rooms.
Yeah. Yes, I bet they probably think, Mum must be making that up. How could a pony have got into Mum's room? She is 90, after all. She's got confused. And then you have to say, actually, the pony did. Well, Hannah, what a lovely story. It really is a heartwarming story.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
Well done, you. And Foxholes Care Home sounds pretty special to me.
Oh, it is. And everyone here is special to us too, so...
That's great. Well, that's Hannah Granger, who works at Foxholes Care Home, and those ponies were called Pickles, Romeo and Oliver. Those Shetland ponies. Well, that's all we've got time for today. For the latest from the Daily Mail, download the Mail Plus app. Every weekday at 5pm, you can listen to me all over again. I am Andrew Pearce. This is The Andrew Pearce Show. I'll be back on Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend and good night.